Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Live Free Now show, bringing you the news, views, tips, and tools you can use to live free, prosperous, and healthy life. We've had a couple evening editions of the program. Last week, we interviewed Tom Barnett on natural law. That was at 6 o'clock because he was in Australia, down under. Our next guest is coming in from the other side of the world, kind of. I guess you'd go this way. But really excited to hear from the one, the only James Corbett of the Corbett Report, CorbettReport.com. He's an OG conspiracy researcher, solutionary that has been in the game for quite some time. And the beauty of being in the game for a while is it gives you perspective, because a lot of folks wake up, quote unquote, wake up, and it's like a fresh thing. And there's a tendency to get caught in a reactionary trap. But when you're rooted in principles, when you've seen cycle after cycle after cycle, you start to pick up on patterns. And so really want to dive deep on that with Mr. James, because we want to, you know, kind of protect our movement in a way. And unfortunately, far too often, we see people fall victim of a psyop within a psyop. And we kind of feel like, oh, we got it all figured out. We're awake. We're red-pilled. And all the normies, they're being taken for a ride by the mainstream media. And then, unfortunately, the alternative media, maybe it's clickbait. Maybe they want to play up the sensationalism. But then there's also some intelligence influence in some of this alternative media, or mainstream alternative media, as some would call it. And so I just want to make sure that folks, you know, get grounded in some principles. Don't get taken for a ride as part of the conspiracy movement, because it's a huge thing now. And they're like, how do we deal with this? Oh, let's co-opt it. Classic move. And then, of course, we're going to talk about solutions. James is somebody that really, it was an interview James did with Derek Brose. I went back and backtracked it. I think it was 2016. And that's really what helped us get the Freedom Cell Network, the first little growth of that network, which has since turned into a big global movement. But without further ado, let's bring on the one, the only, Mr. James Corbett. How are you, James?
I'm doing all right, John. Thanks for having me on. And first of all, how's the connection? I noticed a little bit of a hiccup there when we started rolling.
It's good. It's good on my end.
All right, good.
I hope my picture quality's holding up. I did my test earlier and everything looked good. So I'm going to monitor it over here on the YouTubes. Okay, cool. Yeah, a lot of people are familiar with you. People have been following you for a while. But if folks aren't familiar with James Corbett and the Corbett Report, if you just want to introduce yourself real quick.
Sure. I'm James Corbett, CorbettReport.com. I've been living and working in Japan for 20 years. I've been doing the Corbett Report for 18 years. I started back in 2007. And at that time, I thought I was late to the podcasting game. Turns out I might have been a bit on the early side. And it's a good thing I was, because over that time, I've been able to build up an audience of people who are able to support my work so I can do this full time. Basically, I talk about news and politics and society and philosophy and science and history and absolutely anything else that tickles my fancy. And I like that term solutionary, because I certainly have taken more and more and more of a solutions focus, because as you say, once you get the perspective on these things after having done it for a number of years, you start to realize, yeah, the problems and the conspiracies and the questions are all fascinating and intriguing. But once you know essentially what this is about, then it's time to start asking yourself what to do about it. And speaking of what to do about it, I notice my head is particularly shiny in this light. So why don't I switch to my studio lights here?
It's an aura.
There we go.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I hear what you're saying. Like, it's the same strategy that the predator class, what term do you like to use? Predator class, New World Order, globalists, which one?
Whatever you want to call them, the pathocrats, the cacistocracy. I mean, we could come up with a million terms. I like the powers that shouldn't be, but whatever you want to call them.
Yeah. I like that people, I used to call them the elite, and people are like, no, they're not elite. Don't give them that prestige. So
I like how about elitists?
They are elitists,
not elites. They are elitists.
That's right. Derek, I first heard predator class from Derek, and that kind of resonated with me. Me and Derek are iron sharpens iron kind of vibe going on there. So I'm always borrowing from him, and we're borrowing from each other. But the strategy, it seems to be the same strategy. Problem, reaction, solution is a big one. Fear, push people, turn people against the other, implement greater police state, surveillance state. People will go for it because they want to be protected. They feel insecure and unsafe. So the strategy stays the same. So I appreciate what you're sharing. It's like, we can research it till we're blue in the face. But at the end of the day, it's the same damn thing. And I get it. Folks are all excited about it and it feels good. It doesn't feel good, actually, when you first get started. It feels very poor and you're angry and you've been lied to. But then you kind of start being like, okay, I kind of see what's going on. And then just like Marty McFly is like, I've seen this one. It's a rerun. It keeps happening over and over and over. So let me ask you this. Let's talk about the freedom movement, truth movement, health freedom, this whole thing we're a part of with various factions. One thing that I've come to realize is it's almost like in the beginning, they tried to keep the truth, the conspiracy, a secret, and they would discredit folks. And early on when we would talk about 9/11 truth, that we were considered kooky, and that was the play. Let's make them seem silly and discredit them so no one takes them seriously. But then because of shows like yours and people passing out DVDs and info jamming, and remember when everyone used to shout 9/11 was an inside job at media events and stuff, it punctured into the mainstream culture. And then it kind of became a meme, so to speak. Now it seems as though the powers that wish they were, the predator class, is kind of like, okay, we can't keep it silent. So what can we do to kind of control it? What's your take on that? Is that what you're seeing also?
Oh, absolutely. It was an identifiable trend that occurred. And I would say it was sometime in the 20-teens where conspiracy mainstream culture started to eat conspiracy culture. And you started to see it reflected in just even the cool clothing trends with All Seeing Eyes and Illuminati and stuff like that. It started to get sort of mainstreamized. And of course, in the process, watered down and made into nothing more than a clothing trend or a meme or, you know, something that, you know, weird celebrities talk about or something. And unfortunately, in the process, of course, losing a lot of the meat from the bones. There are good and bad aspects to that. One of the things that I always point to about the 9/11 truth movement in particular and what it accomplished, if it managed to accomplish anything, one thing I always go back to is that I remember back 18 years ago when I was just starting this, it was an uphill battle just trying to explain to people the concept of a government. Why would a government attack itself? And you'd have to explain various aspects of that and false flag terrorism and the history of this, et cetera, et cetera. At least at this point, people now know about this, and it is now a daily part of regular headlines. I just saw a Miami Herald headline just the other day about Maduro is saying that they caught the CIA agents there that Trump sent into Venezuela, and they were plotting a false flag attack. Yeah. And they don't have to even explain what a false flag attack is in the news anymore, because that's been mainstreamized. That sort of at least awareness is to the good. But having said that, there are obviously downsides to this. One of which is I also remember 18 years ago when I was just starting all of this, that if the common thing that you would hear from people in mainstream land, which at that time, of course, meant television news, CNN and what have you, those types of talking heads would laugh at people. Well, where did you hear that? On the internet? Ha 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 ha. As if, oh my God, it cannot be true if you've heard it on the internet. Of course, now fast forward, you know, nearly 20 years, and those very same people are now either flooding onto the internet on Substack or what have you, trying to get a piece of this pie, or are finding their dinosaur media jobs are evaporating because the comet struck a couple of decades ago and they were busy making fun of the comet. So here we are. It's definitely a different landscape than it was. And that's to the good and the bad.
Yeah, I saw that article too and just thought it was a total trip. And let me pull this up real quick. Because there was one thing that they referenced, which I thought was pretty cool, which used to seem kooky, right? There we go. Maduro false flag. So check this out. I thought that this was rich. And this is New York Post. I don't know how credible they are. They're the ones that were trying to put out that Hunter Biden laptop thing originally, and then they got shut down. All right, so Venezuela claims it captured mercenaries with ties to CIA plotting a false flag attack. And they actually go in here and say, Rodriguez, this is the Venezuelan official, likened the purported plot to the 1898 explosion of the USS Maine. They took it old school And of course, the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which was most definitely proven. This one's a little fishy. It's kind of hard to prove that one. It's so long ago, but there's a lot of research showing that that was a false flag attack. But I just love that this is out here. So let's go ahead and get down to this one then. Actually, let's stick with that. Let's see. Sorry, I'm jumbling up here. There we both are. And Wait a second. Ah, there we are. Okay.
We're professionals. So, we know what we're doing here.
I'm throwing everybody off. It's a mind control. Make sure you stick with it. Okay. So what can we do as a movement, especially folks that are new to this scene, to kind of inoculate themselves from this deception that could be within our movement, mainstream alternative media? How do we tell when something is a good source, when someone's an authentic journalist, and how can we tell if it's all blending together now? And there's even like paid $7,000 to push pro-Israel. That's one tell. If you're pro the Israeli regime, that's probably someone you should avoid. But what are some things to look for that you've picked up on in your journalistic experience?
I would say that the exact same things that we should have been looking for in the old mainstream media paradigm are the things that we should be looking for in the independent media paradigm, which is to say there is no shortcut to critical thinking. You still have to critically and rationally examine your sources and what it is you're taking on board. And that's why I always try to dissuade people from trying to find a good source. Oh, this guy is a good source. This guy is reliable. You can trust this outlet. I don't like to think in that mindset. And I don't want people to think that, for example, about me. I mean, you don't know. I could be a secret intel operative or whatever, or at the very least.
We're in a lot of trouble if you're batting for the other team there, James.
Well, hey. But at the very least, I'm human. I could get things wrong from time to time, right? And how would you know? Well, why don't you check my sources? This is why the Corbett Report was predicated on, founded on, from its very inception, open source intelligence news. The point was that I would cite my sources. When I say, talk about a document, when I talk about a video or something, I will link you to that so that you can, and obviously no one has time to check absolutely everything that everyone says, but if you're interested in something, check into it and see the source and see, okay, what is this source and where is it coming from? And can I triangulate that information? That is one of the best ways to understand or try to get a handle on things that you do not have first person contact with, is to see if you can triangulate the information from different sources and they corroborate each other. And then you start to create a scaffolding of facts that you can establish from which you create a broader narrative. And I certainly have my own narrative, but I'm fully open about that. I have a narrative, I have a stance, I am a voluntarist, I come from a certain political ideology and a philosophy, and that's my guiding North Star, as it were. And that's how I understand the world. And look, I think this fits into it and this fits into it. If you're not from that perspective, great. That doesn't mean that the things that I'm saying are wrong. It just means that you might have a different interpretation of them. And so in the end, I think, again, it comes down to the exact same things that people should have been doing 50 years ago are the exact same things that people should be doing now. Examine sources, examine evidence, see if you can triangulate information, see what works and what doesn't. And obviously, you will find those people that you think are more on the ball, who tend to get things more right. There's more signal than noise. But that's a calculation that you're going to have to make for yourself. And when you are critically thinking, it will be a relatively easy calculation to make. I know when I see a source that is consistent and reliable, doesn't mean I trust everything they ever say. It just means that I think, oh, this is at least worth following. And the whole other question about this is, who do you follow? How do you follow them? Because the how part of it is actually incredibly important. Because if you are relying on social media, if you just go to Twitter, X, whatever it's called these days, and you're letting that algorithmically determined feed then determine what it is that you're looking at on a daily basis, then you're going to get lost, because it is going to start shaping you. Mm. If you want to take direct control of that, hey, there are already resources out there for you to do that. And I always blow the horn for RSS. Really simple syndication, because that is how I get my news. I do not rely on Twitter or whatever else to try to feed me what it is I should be seeing on a daily basis. No, I know I want the news from this website and this website and this website and a bunch of different places, mainstream and independent and everything in between, so that I can then have exactly as it should be. And I wish social media still worked this way, but a chronological list of here are all the people that you follow, and here's exactly what they posted in a chronological way. And I can go through it and see every single day what headlines I want to look at and which ones I can discard. And that to me, the how is almost as important as the who, because if you're, again, if you're letting the algorithms determine where you're going to get directed one way or another.
Good stuff. Good stuff. As you were sharing that, I was reminded that you gave a talk at the Greater Reset 3, before is the People's Reset Now, coming up in January in Mexico, guys. I'll be there. Would love to see folks live in person. TheGreaterReset.org for tickets. The ticket sales go up at the end of this month, November 1st. So if you're going to join us, now's a better time. I'm going to drop this link there. You did a whole talk on how to conduct online research. So for folks that want to go deeper on that, James has been doing journalism and research for 18 years. So that was a great talk. And thanks for always supporting our efforts with the Greater Reset, People's Reset, and the Freedom Cell Network, and pumping that transmission out there. So something that I was talking, I forget who it was recently. We were talking, it was Tom Barnett on the last week's show, about how in some instances, it may be the case that the freedom, especially the truth movement, in some ways may have a higher propensity to disempowerment, precisely because so much energy and attention is focused on this big, giant, all-powerful boogeyman. And they're not big, giant, and all-powerful by any means. They only have that power which we give to them, that authority which we give to them. But there's so many fear, sensationalist, clickbait journalists. They don't even rise to the level of journalism, really. Influencers out there, that our movement latches onto that, in part because, like, we're turned on by that. I remember somebody was talking smack about me in this group back in the day, and it was this really personal thing. And I was like, I don't have time to bother with this. My policy is not to engage. My reputation stands on its own. But then I found myself going back to check at my own shit show dumpster fire. And I realized, like, people seek this kind of thing out. It's like a thrill, like a amusement park roller coaster kind of thing. And so there's, like, people are focused on it, fear, and it drops all this adrenaline. They almost become addicted to it. But a lot of people in our movement feel that the predator class is all powerful. They're omnipotent. They're omnipresent. They're everywhere. They're omniscient. They know everything. And that in turn takes away their power, leading them maybe less likely to go do all the research because they want somebody to do it for them. You want to riff on that? Like, do you think that's a tendency in our movement that we need to watch out for?
Oh, undoubtedly so. And I think you can see victims of this all the time. People who have basically decided in their head that nothing will work and nothing could ever possibly work because the Illuminati or whatever you want to call them, they control everything and everything that everyone ever does. And to me, I call that the cartoon version of conspiracy theorizing, because it's about the smoky cabal in the back room who literally controls everything. And I suppose these people think that there is, like, some sort of literal script that is handed out to all of the political puppets around the world. And okay, now Putin, you're going to say this. And now, okay, Xi Jinping, you're going to say this. As if it works on that level. Of course it does not. Of course there are powerful interests who have accumulated power by being part of a certain networks that have intergenerationally predated on their own populations and created a system of economic and financial control that is mind-boggling to the average person. That is all true. But as you say, they have the power that we give them. And this is not a particularly new insight. It's been around for at least half a millennium now with Etienne de Laboétie and the Discourse on Voluntary Servitude. And he made the point 500 years ago that the tyrant is not some sort of all-powerful, amazing, you know, emperor god. It's just a person that people listen to and follow orders from. And in order to break that spell of the tyrant, all you have to do is not follow his orders. It's not some kind of gigantic revolution with people, you know, guns blazing and people on the streets. It is simply refusing to follow orders. And I would say the other side of that is taking that time, that energy, that attention, all of those resources that we put into building up this system that we all know is inhuman and is not functioning correctly, and taking that time and energy and putting it into what we want to create. And that's why, in fact, that is exactly why I started Solutions Watch, because as people in your audience may or may not know, I was doing something called Propaganda Watch for a few years before Solutions Watch, back in, I think, 2017 I started. And that was me week after week after week after week looking at different pieces of propaganda and explaining to people what was happening, the psychological manipulations, the techniques that were being employed, how to protect yourself against them. I think it was some good and valuable work. But after a few years of that, I started to realize, hey, even myself, now that I'm doing this weekly series on propaganda, I'm always looking at and for propaganda. Oh, I could talk about that. Oh, I should talk about this. Oh, I should do this. And I'm always in that propaganda mindset. And it took me a few years, but I realized, okay, that's great and wonderful. And now we know that. But the much more important thing is, what do we do about it? And that's why I started Solutions Watch, so that instead of week after week after week after week looking at propaganda, now it's week after week after week after week looking at solutions and people with ideas. And certainly not all of the ideas will pan out and not all of them will work for you in your particular situation. But I think at the very least, just getting into the mindset of identifying solutions is an incredibly rewarding mindset to be in, because then you start to realize there really is power from us. We really do have power in our time, our energy, our attention, our resources, and we can start building the world that we want. And I get that isn't clickbaity. I mean, demonstrably so.
You got to work. You got to do
Solutions Watch episodes consistently get maybe half of the views of my regular episodes. So I know that people, you know, a lot of people will be turned off by this. Who cares? Solution? Oh, I want to hear about the latest juicy conspiracy gossip. But anyway, I don't care. I'm going to continue doing this because I know it is valuable. And I know that the people who benefit from it really benefit from it. And that there will be, if there is to be any change in the direction we're heading, it will be from those people who are out there actually implementing solutions rather than the people who are just endlessly studying the conspiracy culture.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it takes action to bring about change, not just research or knowing things. You got to do things. Knowing things is important. And I always like to say, let's not research the predator class's agenda just to know it so we can feel morally superior or like word vomit. Everybody like knows this stuff. And then they proceed to word vomit all over their family and they like tarnish relationships and it's not even worth it. But no, we should study the conspiracy so we can know how to navigate around it and opt out of it. And I just remembered too, I was your first Solutions Watch segment.
That is right.
Yeah, I'm going to drop that one. We talked freedom cells and the greater reset back in the good old days.
That's right.
I've kind of thinned out a little bit from that one. I'm a little healthier as I get a little bit older. That's cool. Good to see. Yeah. Okay, cool, cool. So I want to dive into solutions. And you had a great article. I get your email newsletter. Guys, CorbettReport.com is the website, CorbettReport.com. And he's got a ton of videos and a bunch of old classic documentaries, too. So you come down to this documentary stream. And this kind of dates James here, going back to some classic stuff, especially the classic 9/11 stuff. And then everyone's talking about the conspiracy, but nobody's like, well, who could have possibly been responsible? That's pretty bold to really name names and such. But lots of good material, classic stuff, stands the test of time. And then you'll see the recreation. Like there was so much overlap between the COVID PSYOP and the 9/11 PSYOP and how they rolled it out and the propaganda. But come check it out. Join the newsletter too. Here's newsletter. So, yep. Great post on agorism. Before we get into that, let me ask, and folks, if you have questions, put your questions in all caps. I want to invite some questions. I'll bring on some of the better questions that I think most people can relate to. So ask some questions. We got James Corbin in the house. If you're just joining us, this is the Live Free Now show live. Normally we're Wednesday, 11 a.m. Central, but we're 6 p.m. because James is over in Tokyo. He did a great article about agorism. We'll talk about that. Let's get to a topic that's less controversial now. And maybe that's by design, especially on X. X is like bipolar, swinging between censor all of the anti-Israel stuff and trumpet and play up all the anti-Israel stuff. Now it's back to the censor and protect Israel phase. I don't know what's up with that, but I'll preface this question with a little backstory. I don't know if you were familiar. Maybe you were taking jabs at me on y'all's little thing about Elon Musk or whatever it was. And you were like some character. And I was like, I hope he's not jabbing
that
at me.
That character is not you. But okay, good. But I did remember your Elon Musk defense. Yeah.
Yeah. Derek was always giving me. One time Derek interviewed me and he did like this ambush journalism thing. Sucker. And he's like, so tell us about your support for Elon Musk, or do you still really feel that way in light of this and that? And I was like, come on, Derek, you don't have to hit me like that. But for a while, I was a Musk fan, and it mostly was rooted in, and people could debate about this. I think I would I think the truth is that I do believe he is an entrepreneur and he gets shit done at a massive scale. And as an entrepreneur myself, yes, he gets government subsidies, yada, yada. But as an entrepreneur myself, I was studying like, wow, what is this guy's work ethic like? What are first principles and all this stuff? And I was emulating it. And I drove a Tesla at one point. Now I got a Ford F-250 pickup truck. But I was like, okay, I see that he is playing ball with the Department of Defense. And it's my belief that he's a maverick, independent, and he's playing ball as a means to the end of allowing the U.S. to shoot his rockets up into orbit so he can fulfill his desire for humans to be a multiplanetary species. But he's still a maverick, even though he's playing ball with them. He's not a libertarian or an anarchist. That was my thinking. Maybe I was just making excuses for myself. Then when he said some offhanded comment about Israel, that wasn't even that bad. And he was like replying to somebody's post. And then he had to tuck tail and do an apology tour with Netanyahu. And then he started really pumping the message of Netanyahu and the Israel regime. And so at the time, I was still of the mindset that Elon is a maverick and he's just playing the Department of Defense, mutual benefit kind of thing. But then I was like, oh, wow. Israel has Elon by the balls. And I thought Elon was this independent billionaire power center of his own right, but Israel's obviously has him on a leash now. Whoa. And then the Gaza stuff was kicking off. And for the longest time in the conspiracy movement, as you know, people are always like, it's Israel, it's the Jews, it's all the Jews. They're at the top of the pyramid. And I would always dismiss that because it's a bunch of different factions competing for power. Some have more power than others, but I really started to see like, okay, Israel, especially Zionists, do have immense influence, more than I originally thought, on world affairs. And they definitely have influence over U.S. politicians, most likely under the work of Whitney Webb and others through their Brownstone operation, where they blackmail these folks, get them in precarious situations. And Mossad apparently had a big role to do with that. So let me ask you the big question. Hopefully it doesn't cut the YouTube feed. How much power do you think Israel has? How high up in the pyramid of power, as Derek describes it, do you believe they are? And is it also a psyop where they're allowing this anti-Israel sentiment maybe to unleash free speech controls or something? I don't know. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a good question, both sides of it. The first question, I think the answer is increasingly obvious to everyone that obviously Israel punches way above its weight, at the very least on the geopolitical scale, right? Mm-hmm. How is it that this tiny nation out there in the Middle East is able to, if not dictate American foreign policy, at least certainly influence it in very incredibly important ways? And you have to look, for example, at the neocons who infested the Bush administration, directing the war of terror, and pretty much all of them, to a man, admitted and avowed Zionists. Some of them, of course, involved in even drafting the clean break document for Netanyahu during his initial term in 1996, then going on to found PNAC, in which, in both the clean break document and in the PNAC documents, it just turns out that we got to get Saddam. Why does the U.S. have to get Saddam?
Right? Will you real quick, what's a Zionist and then what's PNAC? Because a lot of folks may not PNAC, yes. Especially, but what's a Zionist and what's the
PNAC? Let's go back to brass tacks. Yes, okay, so Zionism was a 19th century into the early 20th century idea of the Jews need a homeland. And there were various proposals as to where that homeland should be and what should happen. It started to coalesce after World War One, or during World War One, during the Balfour Declaration, where the British Home Secretary, Foreign Secretary, whoever it was at the time, essentially pledged Palestine to the Jews, which was odd because it wasn't even a British mandate at that time. It did become one, but. Anyway, that's the British writing checks that they can't cash. But that was specifically, that letter was addressed to Lord Rothschild, the British version, the British branch of that infamous family, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, it did ultimately become a reality after, of course, there was the British mandate of Palestine. But then we saw the terrorism that was enacted by Zionists, people who wanted that homeland and wanted it established there, were committing spectacular terror attacks, including the largest terrorist attack in the world at that time, the bombing of the King David Hotel that killed Brits and Jews and Muslims and others. Of course, that resulted in the creation of Israel, the state of Israel. So Zionists are ones who, traditionally, it was about the establishment of the Jewish homeland. Now that Israel exists, it is about essentially Israeli supremacy and the maintenance of that supremacy and people who are wedded to the Israeli state. So that is, and of course, that does not mean you have to be Jewish to be a Zionist. There are many, many Christian Zionists who are invested for a number of different reasons, some of them financially, some of them blackmail, some of them because of a genuinely held religious belief that this is the Holy Land. And in order of course, Christ will come again after the creation of the Third Temple and the big, you know, battle between the Antichrist and Christ will come back and all of that. So there's this eschatological, philosophical, theological thing going on that motivates many of the people at this table, including billions of devout believers around the world, because of course, Jerusalem is the nexus of Christianity and Judaism and Islam. So anyway, that's Zionism. And the other question was
the Project for a New
American Century, which was founded, I believe officially founded, was it 97 or 98? At any rate, it was the neocons, including all the people that you wouldn't recognize from the Bush administration, including, of course, Cheney and Rumsfeld, but also Douglas Feith and Richard Perle and all of those types of people who went on, as I say, to infest the Bush administration and direct its foreign policy, including, of course, the Office of, not the Office of Special Plans, I can't remember what they called themselves, but essentially the Pentagon sub-office that was feeding all of this false intelligence through Chalabi and what have you about Iraq, and making it so that from day one after 9/11, that literally on the evening of 9/11, they were already starting to talk about, well, we got to go after Saddam. Why? Because that was part of the clean break document that these same people had authored for Netanyahu back in 96. It was part of the PNAC documents that they'd been issuing for years. And so they just made it part of the American foreign policy agenda. So why did America go into Iraq? Yeah, oil and things like that too. But of course, part of it was this Zionist need to secure greater Israel by toppling the opponents in the region. It ended up backfiring in a number of spectacular ways, because in the power vacuum after Saddam, Iran ended up having a outsized influence on what was happening in Iraq and actually growing its regional power. So now we have to go after Iran, which was also part of the PNAC plan.
Yeah. And so we were talking about this Zionist control of the foreign policy. You know, when I was in college, I used to think like, oh, Israel is this satellite of the United States foreign policy in the Middle East. And then as I grew older, I started to realize like maybe the United States is a satellite of Israel as far as the influence and control. But that document that James was referencing, well, this is one of the documents. It's like a policy document called Rebuilding America's Defenses, Strategy, Forces, and Resources for a New Century by this organization of neoconservatives, many of them of Jewish descent. Not that that means anything, but they are also Zionists that are pushing this agenda, and they'll push this agenda at any cost, even genocide. And this policy calls for these new, this document calls for these new neoconservative policies, the ability to fight multiple wars on multiple fronts at the same time, preemptive strikes, which wasn't an American thing for a while, except for dropping the atomic bomb, I guess. That wasn't necessarily preemptive, I should say. Anyway, they say further, this was written on September 2000. Further, the process of transformation, even if it brings revolutionary change, is likely to be a long one, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. And then exactly a year later, of course, 9/11 happened, which is a trip.
And by the way, let me just throw in the quick COVID parallel with that, because people might know that back in October of 2019, October of 2019, so just a few months before the scamdemic that changed everything, the Milken Institute was holding a conference in which there was, for example, Anthony Fauci and Dr. Richard Bright and other people that are important in the U.S. biosecurity state, at least at that time, who were talking about these wonderful new mRNA DNA vaccines that are going to be available, but it's going to take these pharmaceutical companies at least a decade of, you know, incredibly costly trials and experiments and what have you, unless there was some sort of big spreading flu pandemic or something, that some perceived biosecurity risk, and the U.S. government could come in and mandate them, which lo and behold is exactly what happened. Wow. Unbelievable.
That's a wild parallel. That's a good point. There's so many of them. I often point out to people too, because this is something you'll be familiar with. People that make a career out of this, or that are just constantly in this game, activism, spreading the message, solutions, we stay at it all the time. And it becomes a lifestyle, living this exit and build freedom life. But a lot of people, and I don't fault anyone or blame anyone, because I know it's hard to make ends meet oftentimes, and inflation, this, that, and the other. But a lot of people only take action or start paying attention or start building, opting out when there's like the New World Order's breathing down their neck. We see the phenomenon happening now in the wake of the UK digital ID big push. Of course, we saw it during COVID. But then in the off season, people go about their business and get caught in a hypnotic rhythm of life and paying the bills and just hanging out, watching TV and such. So I just really want to encourage people to keep at it, because it may appear as though things cool down, but the predator class is constantly pursuing their agenda. And they're, and then under Trump, especially, technocracy in the US has advanced at a rapid rate. But always know that it's one false flag away from the agenda accelerating 10x, 100x, just like it did with 9/11 and the police state, surveillance state, and the military industrial complex, just as it did with COVID. So you got to stay on that game. And with that, let's talk. I see the questions coming in. So thanks, guys. Some of these are great solutions oriented questions. We're going to get to them, but let's set the stage with, what is agorism? Why does it excite you so much? And why is it important for people to understand this philosophy, strategy, principles? I saw your article there. You're kind of breaking that down with good stuff. What's it all about?
Right. So I would encourage people who are interested to start by maybe reading my editorial. But from there, you will find links to resources that will help flesh out that picture, including, of course, the Agorist Primer by Samuel Edward Konkin III. So for people who don't know, he was a libertarian activist / philosopher / science fiction writer, etc., who was influential in those circles back in the 70s, 80s, 90s. And he wrote the Agorist Primer, which essentially laid out the vision for what agorism is. So for people who don't know, agora is a Greek word. It means essentially the marketplace, but that's a polluted word. People are going to think of that in a certain way. No, when they're talking about the agora, the ancient Greek agora, what they're talking about is essentially the public square, where people would congregate to, yes, buy and sell and trade their goods and what have you, but also to talk, to argue, to share information, to just come together as human beings. And it was a free and open marketplace of exchange of ideas and goods and everything else. And that's the idea of the agora. That's what we want as free, individual, sovereign human beings. That's what we want. We want to cooperate and agree and disagree and interact and transact and not interact with whoever we want in the free and open marketplace of ideas and goods. And so that's what we're working towards, right? And so Samuel Edward Konkin III, he, SEK3, as he styled himself, his idea was, okay, great, yes, so we're libertarian or voluntarist or whatever what you want to call yourself, insofar as, yes, all human relations between people should be voluntary, as in nobody is forced or compelled or put under the force of a gun or extortion or what have you in order to do this or that. Great, yes. All relations should be voluntary. It seems like a pretty basic moral standard. But how do we get to that society? What does that look like? How does that even happen? And SEK3 was advocating for agorism, as in counter-economic activity. And counter-economic activity is anything that is either not explicitly sanctioned by the state or anything that is actually forbidden by the state. So gray and black markets, what have you, anything up to and even including going, you know, 1 mile an hour over the speed limit is counter-economic activity because it is prohibited by the state. But the point was, this is activity that is done specifically in defiance of the state and specifically to reduce the state's scope of action and its ability to enforce that scope of action. So theoretically, anything that reduces what, you know, the taxes that you're going to pay to the state, et cetera, et cetera. So working under the table for cash and all of that kind of stuff. And he made the point that that counter-economic activity is the path towards that free society. It is also that free society, that because ultimately that will be the free society. It is all the free and voluntary things that we do, not under compulsion of state theft and extortion and what have you, but as free human beings and our negotiations with other free human beings. So That article that I wrote specifically was in reference to a video that Larkin Rhodes put up recently, why I don't talk about agorism. And he made the point that voluntarism is a philosophy, so I talk about the philosophy. Agorism is a strategy, so I don't concentrate on the strategy. There's, you know, there's many ways to get there. But I think SEK3 would argue, no. The strategy is the goal. They're not separable, because what is a free society other than the free counter-economic activity of all the people?
Yeah, and he writes about that, the strategy, and means and ends. And, you know, one thing about Larkin, I love him, and boy, he is doing great work for our movement and to spread the message. But he is a message guy only and kind of light on solutions, which is maybe why he's, I don't know, I didn't watch the video that he did, but maybe why he doesn't talk about
it. You should watch the video. I have no qualms with Larkin and what he's doing. He's woken up so many people to the truth about voluntarism and what have you. So my hat's off to Larkin and all the work he does. I to some extent, this comes down to semantics. And I think he was probably motivated by the people who get the sort of the purist attitude. Oh my God, you drove on a government created road. Therefore, you're not a pure agorist or whatever. I think that was kind of where he's coming from on that, which I understand, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah. And everybody's always like, why don't you talk about my thing? And you don't talk about my pet conspiracy. Yeah. Okay, we're going to get to these questions. Before we do, I'm going to pause real quick to throw out some love for some of our sponsors. My friends, hey, to make this show possible, we have a small handful of sponsors, and I want to thank one of them real quick. My good friend Hakeem Anwar over at Above Phone is hosting a webinar tomorrow. For those of you that are watching live, October 29th at 12 p.m. Central, it's going to be an overview of their devices. So Hakeem does Above Phone, and they do de-Googled privacy phones. They also have a Linux-based laptop and even a tablet. But the cool thing about Above Phone is, you know, sometimes this can still be overwhelmed for folks, even though it's like pre-installed, ready to roll. They have all sorts of tutorials, courses, videos, and when they do special promotions, sometimes you even get like a free onboarding call. So their team makes it really easy to lean into non-big tech, non-Apple, non-Android technology. And they're going to be covering that in the webinar tomorrow. You can sign up. I'm going to drop the link in the chat. We have a little special affiliate code there, so make sure you follow that link, but it's abovephone.com/webinar?live free. And if you watch this on the replay, they always do other webinars. So you go to this page and you'll see another webinar. So that's one of our sponsors, Above Phone. They help make this show possible. Another sponsor I want to bring to your attention, my friends, livefree.academy/wolfpack. We're talking about agorism. We're talking about counter-economics. Well, I have a monthly subscription where they mail. Let me bust out my knife here. They actually mail me some silver every single month. I'm on, I think it's the Warrior Pack. So I get $125 worth of silver. And here's the kicker. Notice it's in a discrete package. The beauty of this, again, livefree.academy/wolfpack. If you want to sign up, use coupon code LFA and you get a free silver dime and like a silver quarter or something like that. You get some free junk silver. So check it out. The beauty of this is that they send you tradable silver. I actually use some of their silver to buy $55 worth of groceries at a Amish farmer's market in Tennessee. Yeah. So there's a gold back. That's part of it. Pretty cool. What else do we got here? Some little treats. We have 2 silver ounce rounds, and that may be it because the price of silver is going up. So check this out. Let me just show you real quick. Again, livefree.academy/wolfpack. Livefree.academy/wolfpack. We got these 2 silver ounce rounds and a gold back. The gold backs are worth like $8 each. That's what they trade for. And then these are what, $50 now a piece? So definitely check them out, livefree.academy/wolfpack. Great freedom-oriented company. They sponsor the Land Summit. They are supporters of the show and the freedom movement. And then you'll just go ahead and have that precious metals that's tradable. Keep it in your pocket. Go to the farmer's market. Strike up conversations about alternative currencies. You can hold on to some of it as well. Since we started promoting them, silver was like $40. It's gone up 20% or so. So those are some sponsors. If you like the show, if you like the content, if you like what we're doing here, support our sponsors because they help make this possible. And now let's continue with the interview with Mr. Corbett. Okay. All right. Thank you. There we go. Man, I usually have this down to a science here, but I'm all fumbling around. We're the professionals.
It makes you nervous.
Yeah, that's right. We got James on the show. Okay, so let's hit some of these questions. And I'm grateful that they're solutions oriented. This is a solutions oriented audience here. So Network Metatron says, James, do you make time for friends on a local level? Are there voluntarists? Are they voluntarists? You got a crew there in Japan?
I do know people around, and over the years I've met some through the sort of, yeah, people who know my work and have met me from online, and we've met and connected in the real world. Other people that I just know as friends, and I certainly, yeah, some of them are voluntarists. Some people are very much committed to that, and for example, I have a friend in Osaka who I had on Solutions Watch once to talk about his little local farm garden plot that he's doing and that kind of stuff. But other people who are not this way inclined at all. And I don't, it's not like in my personal life, I have some sort of, you must have this ideology in order to talk to me. And I think that goes back to what you were saying earlier, the people who just unload all their, you know, conspiracy lore or whatever on all their friends and family and end up having no friends and family anymore because they don't want to talk to him. I think, yeah, whatever, people should live their life however they want. But I think it's probably not going to be productive to happy relations with others to be that person who's always proselytizing and will only talk to other voluntarists. It's good to have a Freedom Cell network and voluntarist people in your, you know, that you know, and people that you can rely on and stuff. But it's good to have human relations with other human beings too, and to get other perspectives, because, hey, guess what? Just because they don't believe everything you believe does not mean they're stupid, and it does not mean they're evil. It just means they might have a different perspective, and maybe they can even teach you a thing or two. So that's kind of my social rant.
I love that. And I'm always like, my sister and brother-in-law, I've been in the game for a long time too. And I annoyed the piss out of my parents. Then my dad came around. He actually worked at the underground bookstore I used to operate for a couple of years, Brave New Books, at behind the register. So the folks that would come down there back 2015 to 2017, they gave him an earful, and now he's on board. But, you know, my sister and brother-in-law, they're smart, they're bright. They know what's going on, but they don't care because they're enjoying life. And sometimes I'm envious of them. I enjoy life too, actually. But I want to just encourage people not to take this too seriously, not to just get so obsessed with this conspiracy stuff that you lose sight of how much beauty, wonder, and frankly, how much freedom we have in this world. We have a whole lot of freedom. A significant majority of our lives are lived in pure anarchy and freedom, where we and we alone have control over what we do, who we spend time with, who we talk to, what we spend our money on. And then the more that you enter the counter economy, the more that becomes the case, especially when it comes to money. So don't lose sight of just good friendships where you can talk about the weather. And I know this might be controversial for this movement. Maybe every once in a while you take in a sports ball game. I don't know. Whoa. Maybe it's soccer's probably bigger there in Japan than football, I imagine.
Oh no, Dodgers. It's a Dodgers
baseball
nation.
Yeah. Cool. That's cool. Okay. Great question. Thank you so much, Network Metatron. Here's another good one. I believe there are a lot of freedom lovers out there, but no real way to identify and meet up locally. What if there was a website you could go to and find people? What solutions are there for this? Organizations, meetups, festivals?
John, I think you got this one covered.
Yeah. So, freedomcells.org. Derek Bros and I co-founded this network of folks. It's probably, when Derek was interviewed by James, it probably went from like 200 or 300 to 1,000 or more. And then it slowly growed up to 3,000, 5,000. I think it was around 4,000 or so before COVID happened. Then it went up to 28,000. It's since grown to 40,000 plus. Now, mind you, these are just people that registered on a website. Many of them fell off and went back to sleep after COVID. Sometimes the website's a little wonky, just to warn you, but freedomcells.org, cells like a cell in the body, freedomcells.org. You can sign up. You can go look at a map. You can put yourself on a map. Don't put your home address. Put a coffee shop down the street or maybe a restaurant that you can meet up with or grab a beer or something. And then people can find you. You can find people. Now, mind you, some of these groups and some of the people might be dormant. So we need you to be a leader to put a map for the cell for a group. We're also very active on Telegram. Alex Zek has a group with The Way Forward, thewayforward.com. He kind of spells it funny. What else? There's conferences, festivals. The People's Reset is coming up in January. Every year there's like 300 people, 300 to 400 people, great people, solutions oriented. So there's constantly different freedom events. Show up on things like this and say, hey, I'm here in Cincinnati. Anybody in that Midwest area, I'd love to meet up, or let's get together on a Zoom chat. You just got to put yourself out there. You want to add anything there?
No, I think those are all great ideas. I'm here in Japan, so I'm probably not going to be much use to people in America, but I think all those things, there are ways of finding people. And I hear this all the time from my audience. There's nobody in my, I don't know anybody who knows anything about any of this stuff. And if that's true, my sincere condolences to you, but I think it's probably not true. I think there are more people out there than you know about. And it doesn't mean that they agree on every single conspiracy point you believe or what have you, but people who would at the very least be useful people to know in an emergency. And I think if there was anything good that happened out of the scamdemic, it is that you at least got to see what businesses and what people are going to interact with you as a free human being. Hey, you want to wear a mask? You don't want to wear a mask? You've got vaccinated? You didn't get vaccinated? Whatever. You're all welcome here. Those are the types of people that you might want to be encouraging and fostering community with, because they've at least proven that in an emergency, they're not going to lose their heads.
Yeah, for sure. And oftentimes the people that are saying there's nobody in my area, they're spending all their time behind a computer. And so I put out courses and we do workshops as part of our membership where, like, I'll teach you, here's where you could go meet people, talk to people at the grocery store. And then you go to a local, you try to find people that have you go places where there's a greater likelihood for there to be freedom people, gun shows, prepper meetups, homeschool groups, Libertarian Party, protests. You could go to protests. I'm not a big protest reactionary guy, but it's people that at least are awake. Digital IDs, they just had big, huge protests in UK. The lockdown protests. Those are great places to strike up conversations and find people, cultivate a relationship from there. But chances are, if you don't know folks in your area that think like you do, you're just not talking to enough people. When I was back in my younger days as a single guy back in college and stuff, I always bring this up and I feel like embarrassed by saying it, but we would always say it's a numbers game, bro. The more women you talk to, the more chances you'll have to find the lady. We'll leave it at that. That's not my game anymore, of course, but it's a numbers game. Strike up more conversations. Hey, did you see what happened in the press? Just like whatever. There's a newspaper there. You're in the checkout aisle. Reference the cover of the newspaper and then try to tie it to something to just try to see, like, oh, can you believe what they're doing with the inflation, or boy, that Trump, or whatever. I don't know. Just strike up conversations is what it's all about. And like James was saying, they don't have to believe like we do all the time to find a good friend. And maybe if you're confident enough, you can find somebody that's apolitical or conservative or something, and you can rub off on them with these voluntarist principles. It is the most consistent philosophy, after all. Yep. Okay, here's another one. And we're coming up on time here. Question, what do you think of the big push from truthers and others to become expats? It's a great question for an expat. I'm in Kanuckistan, which is what they call Canada these days, and now think better the devil you know. I can better navigate my way here in Canada. So what led you to become an expatriate, and what's that movement like? What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, I can actually speak to this from experience because I am an expat. I am Canadian living in Japan. And I did not come here for any sort of political reason whatsoever. I came here completely by happenstance. I was finishing my master's degree in Dublin, and I ran into another classmate of mine. And I just asked him what he was doing. He said, I'm thinking of teaching English in Asia. I was just looking at some jobs. And I thought, hey, that's a way to make some money and see another part of the world. Kill a year before I have to decide what to do with my life. So I get online, I start searching, and literally the first company I find, I apply to, I get the job, and I'm out in Japan. Wow, okay. And I came here for a year, ended up staying 20 because it, well, 21 now, because it turned out to be, hey, this is a good place for me. I'm comfortable here. It has nothing to do with the politics or political side of it. I was not thinking in those ways when I first came out here at all, and I was not switched on to conspiracy reality or what have you. So that has nothing to do with why I'm here. I'm here because it is a comfortable place. Now it is my home. Literally, I have my family, and I've established myself here. So I am here in Japan. Having said that, I would not recommend people run away if they are not inclined to. If you want to go and see other parts of the world, great, awesome. But if you are not inclined to, if you are not already prepared for it, it is not a light and trivial thing to move to another country, especially another country in a different language, with a different culture, where, like myself, I had studied like 3 months of Japanese before coming here. So, I mean, it's a huge undertaking, right? And people should not take that lightly. So I'm not one of these passport bros. You got to get 15 passports and live in, you know, 7 different countries. If you want to, and if that's your lifestyle, great, go for it. But I also think that, yeah, to a certain extent, if people are thinking that, oh, there's some kind of Shangri-La, and if I just move there, then everything will be okay, and I'll be protected from this big agenda. No, it's a global agenda, and it's ultimately about the human drama of the quest for power and control that some people have, and they're enacting that vision in every country, in every place of the globe, in different ways. Of course, it takes different forms in different countries, but it is happening everywhere. So wherever your home is and wherever you feel your home is, if you haven't found it yet, sure, go looking. But if you feel you're at home, then no, I don't think you have to leave in order to try to find freedom somewhere else. No, you should try to carve out the space for freedom that you can in the place that you are. And that is the struggle that all humanity will face forever, presumably.
I'm glad you added that part at the end. That was something that I wanted to add. Like, this life gets easier and less stressful for folks that know what we know about the nature of the conspiracy when you just kind of accept that the price of liberty is eternal vigilance, and our children and their children will inherit this same struggle. And the more that we do, the easier it'll be for them, of course. But this is just the way life is, unfortunately. It's been like this since the beginning of civilization. They just have better technology now. There's always been one small group of people ruling and controlling a larger group of people. It may always be that way, but we can hope to just carve out our little agoras, pockets here and there. I would say, too, what's more important than the jurisdiction that you find yourself in is the people that you know and how prepared you and they are getting each other's backs. It's better, like, if you're in Texas and you know nobody and you're not interested in meeting anybody, it'd be better to be in Massachusetts with a crew of 30 people that meet up regularly and are growing food together and stuff like that. So, it's the hunker down thing. And oh, I will say, too, regardless of where you happen to live, you're definitely going to find greater freedom in the country than in the city. That's part of our whole exit and build thing, of course. But yeah, just enjoy life more than anything. All right. I know that you got to go here at the top of the hour. So we got 3 minutes left. Let me just let you rip on this one. Because you're a very optimistic guy, which is ironic because you also uncover the belly of the beast and the conspiracy, and you've seen it grown for decades, and it's relentless, but you still remain hopeful and optimistic. So OLIP57 says, as we're entering a type of panopticon society governed and controlled by AI and robotics, what genuine hope is there for the human race to survive this?
Yeah. You know what? That is a genuinely good question. And let me, I guess, kind of contradict your point of view there. Because, yes, I think I am, insofar as there is a human spirit and there is that torch of liberty in every individual sovereign human soul that I believe exists and will not be extinguished as long as humans still walk the earth. The question is, well, how much longer will humans walk the earth? And I don't just mean that in some sort of Terminator, you know, versus Cyberdyne AI war that may or may not take place. I mean that just at the level of the genetic manipulations and other things that are changing what it means to be human at a more fundamental level. The brain chips, Elon Musk, I'm sure will implant you with a wonderful brain chip. But at any rate, it will change what it means to be human. And at a certain point, how much of a change can we have before that light of sovereign human freedom is extinguished? And that is where, you know, I think we are actually in a genuine arms race of sorts. And it's not just AI and robotics. It's AI tied into nanobots that can self-program synthetic organisms that can then manipulate us in various ways. I mean, there is crazy, crazy things that are not science fiction that are actively being worked on by DARPA and others right now that would blow people's minds. Should blow people's minds because it is on our doorstep. So yeah, I trust me, I understand this is not a trivial thing, and it is certainly not a set in stone certainty that freedom will prevail. But I know what will happen if we just sort of give up and shrug our shoulders and walk away from this. You know, they, them, those, the powers that shouldn't be will win. So I know that our struggle is pretty much the same as all of our forefathers' struggle throughout all of history. We still have to stand up for what we know is right and try to build the better world for our children and their children and their children's children. But we don't have forever on this. So if there's anyone on the fence, if there's anyone thinking about it, if there's anyone who's discouraged, oh, you know, it's all so bleak, how could we ever possibly fight back? Well, this is the time. to stand up and fight back, because there will be no better opportunity than there is right now. And, you know, it's an exciting time if you want to look at it that way. Glass half empty, glass half full. At the very least, you cannot say that this is a boring time to be born into the human race. And here we are, and we are racing. So let's all join together, because if we don't hang together, we will certainly hang separately, right?
All right. Well said there, Mr. James. I appreciate you. This has been great. It's always fun to pick that noggin of yours. You got a well-researched guy, and I'm always really appreciative of the solutions focus. And again, CorbettReport.com, huge body of knowledge, wealth of information. And then the Solutions Watch is super hard-hitting for folks that are looking for what can I do? It covers a wide variety of topics and things that you can do, practical stuff that anyone can embark upon in their local area and their lives. So really appreciate you. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. Take care. Excellent. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. I just want to add one last point there as what James was saying. I choose to be grateful and blessed for the opportunity to be alive right now and to have the honor of participating in the animating contest of freedom. I think that this conspiracy and what's taking place in the world, it's not happening to us, it's happening for us, so that we may step into our power and embrace our role as creators that were made in the image of God for the purpose of doing good and bringing about light and love to a world that is seemingly dark. I take immense gratitude and joy that I've been blessed with the opportunity to be alive right now, and that I get to play a role in this transition where free people finally remember who it is that they are. We have the power. We just forgot that. And the sooner that more of us remember it and start demonstrating that power that we have through action, the sooner we will get to really experience the joy of a genuinely free society, the free society that you, me, our children, our children's children, the society we all deserve. But it's going to take work, and let's learn to find joy in that work. All right, friends, this is John Bush of the Live Free Now Show, bringing you news, views, tips, and tools you can use to live a free, prosperous, and healthy life. Hey, if you like the program today, maybe it's your first time to tune in, I want to invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's somewhere around here. You can just hit John Bush there and then subscribe. And while you're at it, hit the bell notification so you can be alerted next time we go live. Until then, my friends, as always, signing off. Stay free out there. Peace.